It's Hometown Alaska. I am Charles Wolforth, and you know, I'm a lifelong Anchorage resident, and I remember the days when if there was a concert in town, you went to it because there were so few things going on. In fact, I saw the Grateful Dead in the West High Auditorium, believe it or not, back in the 1970s. Well, times have really changed. There's a lot of opportunities for live music in Anchorage now, a lot of different varieties of music you can hear, and a lot of it is brought in. The artists actually make the long trek to get up here to Anchorage. And we're going to be talking about that today. We're going to be talking about live music, promoting live music, bands that come to Anchorage, individual musicians that come to Anchorage, concert memories you may have, people you wish you could hear. I've got a couple of different promoters on the show, and we're going to have an artist who's come to Anchorage a number of times. And we're going to be spending most of the show today with Mike McCormick of Whistling Swan Productions. If you've been to many shows, you will recognize his accent, although he's a little under the weather today. But I know he's always an enthusiastic person about music, so I'm really excited to spend an hour with you. Thanks for being here, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
So how do you categorize the music you promote with the Whistling Swan Productions? I mean, some of it is traditional, some of it's folk, some of it's like sort of alternative. I mean, what's your pigeonhole?
By and large, we look at it as American roots music that came up out of the folk music, just generally using that term. So that would include blues, folk, bluegrass, a little bit of country. If you trace them all back, you get to the common roots.
Uh-huh. And there's enough people in Anchorage that you can at least make a bit sideline business out of this, right? This is not like your full livelihood.
No. What the business does is it supports itself, and we always pay forward. We make very, very little money on this business. We do it without grants, without anything, and it's just the ticket holders. It's Anchorage supports Whistling Swan Productions, and that's why it continues.
And it's a family affair.
Yeah, it's just been great. My wife is really, sometimes she, actually I was sick Sunday, and so she ran the show up in Palmer. And we have it's been a wonderful thing for our marriage. We have a real division of labor, and you know, it's like we know what we have to do when the show's coming, and it's wonderful. And people see me up on stage, and they say, oh, that's Mike and Whistling Swan. But actually, Katie is every bit as much of a part, and sometimes even more.
Mm-hmm. And some of the bigger artists you've had, I mean, you're having a big one. You're having Arlo Guthrie this year. You're having Judy Collins. You've had Greg Brown a number of times, and John Hyatt and Bruce Coburn. But sort of your bread and butter are some of these artists who normally would be playing small halls or coffee houses and stuff.
Yeah. When I was growing up in New England, I mean, all these people you mentioned, they all started out in small venues. And when I was in high school, I started going to a venue in Cambridge, Mass. Called Passim, which grew out of the Club 47. That's where Joan Baez, that's where, you know, Dylan played his first thing. I saw John Prine's first show outside of Chicago there, you know, Towns Van Zandt. And those are really deep roots for me to see people like that. And the thing about Passim's was it's a listening room. 150 people, you go there to listen. That's why you're there. And it's all focused on the music. And that was really powerful for me.
So when you got to Alaska and not that much of that was happening up here, was that part of your motivation for becoming a music promoter?
Well, sort of.
And you were like a middle school teacher at the time? Or?
Well, I got to Alaska as a cook. And when I finished cooking up at Denali Park, I came to Anchorage and got a job as a PE teacher and a kindergarten teacher. I split half and half. And I loved it. And it was fabulous. And I used to tell people the only thing I miss about Alaska, being in Alaska, is the music and the Red Sox. And I couldn't do a lot about the Red Sox, but, you know, the music at some point, I could. And what happened was in 1987, we were living in Juneau, my wife and I, and we just had our first child, Patrick. And Bill Staines kept coming up here to go to Talkeetna. He first came to Alaska in 1980. We said, God, I used to see Bill Staines at Passim. You know, he dates back to 1969, his first recording. And I said, why don't we bring him here? So I talked to a folk festival there. We contacted Bill, and in 1987, we did a fundraiser for the Anchorage Folk Festival. So that's kind of how we started. But then when we moved back to Anchorage, you know, Bill was still going to Talkeetna, but the thing that was happening is on his way out of Talkeetna, he'd play Saturday night in Talkeetna, he'd stop and he'd pick up any gig he could here in Anchorage. We went to a place it's not the Midnight Express, but it was over there on International. It's a warehouse of sort. Now,
oh yeah,
we went over there, and one night he was doing a gig there, and the place held maybe 500-600 people. They had some really great concerts for a while, but there were about 20 people for Bill, one of our favorite musicians. They killed us.
Mm-hmm.
And there happened to be a man named Daryl Ferens there who was working for community schools. He said, "Daryl, this is awful." And we said, why don't we get Bill next year and have him do a fundraiser for Chugiak Community Schools? He said, "Great idea." So we started doing these fundraisers for Chugiak, and we loved it. And we got lots of people. We did fundraisers with Bill, with Greg Brown, with John McCutcheon.
Wow, these are big, like,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was awesome. And so...
But didn't you, like, think, the artist has to be paid something. You got to fly him up here. You got a lot of money into it. Isn't that kind of scary when you're putting together something like that for the first time?
You cut the deal so it's not so scary.
Okay.
You know, and sometimes, you know, like with Bill... He's playing Talkeetna anyways, and then he's going to drive out of Talkeetna on Sunday either to the airport or to what we can provide him. You know, so it's nice, you know, and so you kind of test the markets.
Put it all up, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so you kind of learn the ropes in doing that. So that was nice. We liked it, and we liked it so much we decided to start our own company, and that was in February 1994. We had our first show with the Moms, who were just a wonderful group with Mary Shallard and Sherry Spink and other women. They were terrific. They had an album out. And we had this woman that we knew was a dynamic performer named Christina Olsen, who we got because she was going to go to Dillingham. Yeah. And she had met somebody at a guitar workshop in California, and that guy had brought her to Dillingham. And so we got Christina the headline, and we got the Moms, and we... you know, we put a little bit of money into it. We had to put money into starting our company and, you know, doing all the paperwork. And we had 101 people show up.
So it was a success.
Yeah, and 98 of them came for the Moms.
Huh.
You know, we did a survey after, you know. And it was just wonderful. And then nobody had ever heard of Christina Olsen, and she's a killer performer. So people said, like, wow, how'd you find this? You know, that's good. So then we kept, you know, doing things like that. So lots of fun.
Well, I know there's more to that story, but let's get back to it after I want to give out the phone numbers for folks. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Wolforth. My guest is Mike McCormick, who promotes all these great concerts in town. And we're talking about music, music that's brought to Anchorage, how that happens. And I'm sure you might have some questions for Mike. I bet there's a lot of people listening who have enjoyed his stage announcements. Usually stage announcements are not a highlight of the show, but it always I always get into it when you get out there and have those enthusiastic stage announcements at the beginning of the show. Anyway, the phone number to get on air with Mike and myself is 550-8422, 550-8422. If you're outside Anchorage, you can call toll-free at 888-252-5752. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And when those emails come in, I will just read them on the air. And we're going to have a guest who is a performer who's about to come up, Peter Mulvey. He's been here a number of times, right, Mike? Tell me a story about Peter before we bring him on.
Well, the first time he was here was UAA, actually. Peter is just great. I mean, there's so many things. But this is a guy that he's a solo musician, but he's a guy that whenever he's on a bill with someone else, he makes the other person sound great, you know, totally puts his ego aside and dedicates himself to making the music sound great. Even though he's a terrific guitarist, he could just dazzle us all night with his guitar playing, but he focuses on the song, he focuses on being selfless when he's on stage with other people. And that's one of the things I love about him.
And I saw him last time he was in town, I think at the Snow Goose, and I'd been listening to his music for years, but I was so impressed by his... charisma on stage, and it's amazing guitar playing. So just before we bring Peter on, I want to play a little bit of his music. Here's Shirt by Peter Mulvey.
Years go rolling, you're 33. It's time for the cross or the bolted tree. But you'd like to cry when you skin your knee. Man, it's hard. The same old friends on New Year's Eve, the same snow falls on same old corduroy shirt.
Such a beautiful song. That was Shirt by Peter Mulvey, and Peter is on the air with us. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
Oh, it's great. So are you back home in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I'm actually in my house in Milwaukee, which is rare enough because I'm going to be on the road a lot this spring.
Uh-huh. And you're headed up here to do shows all around Alaska or just in Anchorage, or what's your plan?
We're going to be, Mike's bringing me into both, by the way, hi, Mike McCormick.
Hey, Malvinator, how you doing?
Real good. Good to hear your voice. He's going to be bringing me into Palmer, to the Vagabond Blues, on the 30th of this month, of January, and then I'm going to fly up to Fairbanks, and play up there at the Blue Loon, and then coming back down, I'm going to play in Anchorage on the 2nd of February, and both... Actually, all three shows are with Tony Furtado, who's a wonderful guitar player and banjo player, too.
So are you guys going to do some duets, or is he opening for you, or how's that going to work?
It's a co-bill, and we're certainly going to play together because, you know, we have a fair amount of vocabulary together. You know, we're both pretty good at playing well with others. I think that probably started in kindergarten. I have no idea. But so the last time, I've only ever played one show with him before. And it was in Monterey, California, and I think I, you know, as soon as he heard me soundcheck, he just came up and said, "Hey, man, you want to play some songs together?" And as soon as he came up and said that, I thought, "Well, yeah, let's do this." So
it sounds like a huge amount of your life is spent traveling around town to town playing music.
Yeah, that's what it's been for the last 20 years, and it's less than it used to be. I mean, I still play about 130, 140 shows a year, which is.
Wow.
Which is substantial, but it used to be 190, 200. Whew, yeah.
So, I mean, obviously you enjoy playing, enjoy being in front of the audience. You must enjoy travel at some level, or you just wouldn't be able to take it.
I do enjoy travel. I'm a fairly moderate person, you know. Like, I take pretty good care of myself, and I'm not a big drinker. I like to go for walks, and, you know, I like to read. And I think that probably explains why I've been able to stay on the road. I mean, if you view it as one long party, you eventually are going to burn yourself out. But for me, I'm fairly sedate.
Uh-huh. Now, when you come to Alaska, are you playing similar venues here as to what you would play in Milwaukee or in, you know, Southern California or anywhere else you would go? Or is there anything different about the kind of shows you're able to do here in Anchorage?
Well, the venues will be about the same. I tend to play, you know, really small theaters and then fairly mid-sized coffee shops and small listening pubs, stuff like that. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. That's what I do, then. It's sort of my ideal. But there is nothing like playing in Alaska. That's just the truth. I mean, it's such an extraordinary place. I was just up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and it's one of the few other places that reminds me in any way of Alaska. It's just kind of a wild place.
So what makes it special? What makes it different? Is enthusiasm of the audience or what's the chemistry here?
I think that's a part of it. You know, if I'm really thinking, what it is, is the resistance that a place has to the sort of gapified monoculture that has slid over the world in the past 30 years. And there's something about people who choose to go to live in such a place. And actually, okay, I'm going to throw out a curveball here. I would say Alaska, the Upper Peninsula, Ireland, and Manhattan, they all share this thing in common. Like if you go to live there, you want to live your
right.
own deal. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
You know, and those places are just not like other places. So I think that's it. You know, I wouldn't say audiences are necessarily that much more enthusiastic in Anchorage, but I would say that I believe it. Like when someone in Alaska comes to see you, it seems like, well, they meant to be there. You know. I mean, because they meant to be in Alaska in the first place. You don't just accidentally wind up there, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I hear you. Now, you've got a song that Mike tells me was inspired by Fairbanks, and when I went to listen to it and carefully listen to the lyrics, I recognized Fairbanks in it instantly. And I want to play a little clip from that song, because sure. I think our listeners are going to recognize a little bit of Fairbanks in it. And then maybe we could talk about how your travels and coming to Alaska might have influenced you. So this is Windshield by Peter Mulvey.
Opens up at the top of the stairs, and all of that brutal Arctic air slides into this basement bar and onto the floor. The sun just rose and now it's setting. Some people here begin forgetting what it is that they came here looking for. And maybe they came just to get away. Maybe they came just to get away. And every windshield in this town has seen better days.
It's a beautiful kind of melancholy song, but it's also a little bit funny if you spend any time in Fairbanks.
Oh, yeah.
So is there a particular nightclub we should think of when you're mentioning it being in the basement bar and having the cold air come down the stairs, or is that a work of imagination?
It's the Marlin, of course. It's the Marlin.
All right. So, yeah. So, I mean, you, in your music, you seem like you take a place or an experience and you develop it into a metaphor about life or where a person is in their life as a fairly common thread in your music. Would you, I mean, is that, and something hit you that particular night in Fairbanks?
Oh, I think that's fair to say. I mean, you know, it's a cliche to say that Alaska is a wild place, but it's also true to say that Alaska is a wild place. And, you know, I don't think we are as civilized, you know, us human beings. I don't know that we're as civilized as maybe we think we are. There's still a lot of animal in us, you know, deep down. And that, to me, is the good stuff. I mean, those are my favorite moments, even here, you know, living in Milwaukee in Wisconsin. I think my absolute favorite moments are when I'm out on a bike ride or out walking by a river and I momentarily forget all the civilization, and you just become some creature on the ground, you know, with the trees around you. And it's usually when you see a bird. I don't know why it is, but you see a bird, and then that's it. You know, you're just, this could be happening at any time in the last 350,000 years, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, I kind of like the idea that this escape to Alaska, this freedom thing, is not 100% positive, too. I mean, it's got a flip side to it, which you don't shy away from in talking about in your music, which is a good thing because it makes the music much more interesting. I'm interested I'm talking to Peter Mulvey, who's coming to Anchorage to perform shortly. I'm talking to Mike McCormick, who's his host, is a promoter. When you're traveling, Peter, I assume you're not staying at the top 5-star hotel in town. What's it like being hosted by Mike McCormick? I'm just curious.
Oh, it's the greatest. It's a real good, you know, it's a real good household, and there's books on baseball and poetry nearly everywhere. So, I mean, what is not to like?
So you're like sleeping in his extra bedroom or something?
Yeah, sure. Sure, you know, it's I get along with Mike and Katie real well. And also, the past few times that I've been to Alaska, I have a friend from Dublin, Ireland, and then he has a roommate who lives with him, but she's from Spain by way of France, and they've come along with me, and Mike, you know, Mike has been really welcoming to them. It's a cool deal watching people from Europe, you know, I mean, where civilization is, in some cases, 2,000 years old. Paris is about 2,000 years old, you know, come to a country that is only, there's only about 350 years of you know, European settled history on this continent. And Alaska, it's even more recent than that. And it's beautiful watching it through their eyes. And, of course, we have, you know, we have real good talks about all that stuff. Uh-huh.
Is that typical when you go to a town that you're going to stay in the promoter's house? Or is it usually more like, do you know people all around the country so you can stay in homes, or do you normally check into a hotel, or how does that usually work for somebody who, you know, is not playing like the stadium, you're playing in a smaller venue?
Oh, I'm usually in a small motel. I mean, in some of the, you know, in a lot of the big cities, if I got a friend nearby, I will, if I get a friend nearby, I'll stay with them, but most of the time it's a hotel. And I'm, you know, I'm very cordial and friendly with just about every promoter I work with, but I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm friends with most of them, you know? Uh-huh.
Sure, because it's a more of a for Mike, I think it's a labor of love, and for a lot of them, I guess it's more of a business.
I suppose I gotta say, you know, and I'm not just saying this because you're sitting there, Mike. But Mike's a pretty dialed in promoter. You know, like he's organized, he gets it done. You know, I've worked with a lot of people. Mike is one of the real good ones. But I do know what you mean. I think that goes hand in glove with it being a labor of love. You know, I also think it's worth saying. A hotel is a beautiful, beautiful thing, even a motel room. Yeah. I did stay in a five-star motel once in Grand Rapids, and, you know, the thread count was nice, but really the best thing about a hotel room is that you can shut the door, and now inside that room is your space, and outside is everybody else's space.
Right. You don't have to deal with them. Okay. Well, I hope you have a great trip up here. I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to seeing your show. I've been talking with Peter Mulvey, and if you go to alaskapublic.org, you can find a link to our show, and a link to Peter's website is there, as well as a link to Cars Ticks to buy tickets, and a link to Mike McCormick's Whistling Swan Productions website, where you can find out more. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Good to hear your voice, Mike.
Yeah, likewise, Peter. Looking forward to seeing you.
All right.
Take care.
Safe travels. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about music and artists who come to Anchorage and what it takes to make that happen. If you want to get on the air with Mike McCormick of Whistling Swan Productions, the number is 550-8422. Maybe you have an idea for an artist you'd like to see come here, or maybe an artist who you saw, who you thought was fantastic in the past, or anything else you want to talk about music, promoting music in Anchorage. I'm interested, Mike, in this the sort of economic model of how this works for artists who play small venues. We hear a lot about how tough it is to make your living in music these days, that recordings sell for 99 cents a piece online if people pay for them at all. And if I go to one of your shows at the library, it's not that big of an audience. How does it pay for itself for somebody to get up here on a plane ticket and stay, and have their meals and everything else? How does that work?
Well, first of all, it's gotten really difficult in the last few years. Things have really changed with this whole change of internet and artists not. It used to be the artists toured to support the albums, and now it's like they tour to support themselves. One of the things we've always done is taken a long view of artists. So, for instance, we'll bring in a Peter Mulvey or a Dan Byrne, sometimes when people have never heard of them, and we'll put them on, and we'll even lose money on them or break even. But we believe enough in the talent and in them that we know the next time they'll come by, maybe they'll break even, and then the next time they'll start making some money for us, and we build it slowly. Sometimes we'll bring someone in as an opener, and then the next time or two times down, they come in as the headliner. But you build the audience, and you take the long-term view. Dot Williams used to say, one of her sayings is, you don't usually make a killing with folk music, but you can make a living. Mm-hmm. But it takes a long view.
You got to be pretty darn good, though, because the people you bring up, on the most part, they're extremely experienced musicians, and they are very, very good at their craft. It's just that what they're doing is not sort of the pop top 40 thing. It's it, mm-hmm. but it's it, if you're bringing up people who were beginners, it wouldn't be working. You're bringing up the best.
Yeah, at first when we started too, we would never bring anybody up unless we'd heard them live. We've gone beyond that. But we've really made, I can think of maybe two or three people I won't name here who we felt like once they got on stage, it's like, oh, God, we made a mistake. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. And one of those people, the opening act, Katie and I were sitting in different places. And we both hit it. It's like, oh, I can't listen to this anymore. It's terrible. And so we went down into, the dressing room. And at the exact same time, the opening act came down. And we all had the same conclusion, and we all had left our seat because of the same thing. And, and it turned out it was a show that most of the people liked the show. A few people, like people say, as they're leaving, that was interesting. But,
Are you nervous when you're putting on a show that, are people going to like it? Is it going to work? Is that, you've got money on the line, but also you just sort of got your name on the line, right?
I want people to be great. And the thrilling thing is if somebody's really great, you just sit there and you just wait for them to hit their stride and mm-hmm. see the audience being taken in. It's a thrilling thing. One person I love presenting is Tom Russell, and he used to come up with a guy named Andrew Harden. And, you know, people would come for Tom for his songs, but they wouldn't have a clue how good of a guitar player Andrew was. And Tom would start out with like a medium thing, and then he'd do like a couple verses, chorus. Then he'd step away from the mic and he'd let Andrew rip. And oh my God, the first time people ever heard Andrew, it was like, wow, what have we got ourselves into? This is like fantastic, you know? Uh-huh. And like this last week with Ruthie Foster, it's like, this is a tremendous, tremendous artist. And it's like, it's only a matter of time till the show catches fire. And so you watch it, and you're nervous. I've got, you know, Rick Miller has been like the greatest thing to have him as a sound person all these years. He's the best. And many people like Leo Kottke and Roger McGuinn, you know, like huge people have said, like, this guy's one of the best guys. You got a great sound being, hold on to him, you know. And they also love the hall. They love, like, the Discovery Theater. Mm-hmm. They love our theaters. You know, so it's like I've got really good ingredients to work with. I'm mm-hmm. really, really fortunate. But, yeah, you do get nervous, but we seldom bring somebody that we don't know is going to be good.
Right. But what about not selling tickets? You know, one of the best shows I saw was Stacey Earle, who's Steve Earle's sister, and never really caught on like she should have. I mean, she was just amazingly talented and such a charismatic performer. You just fell in love with her on stage. And yet they're, you know, sitting there in the library, which is a small hall, still lots of empty seats.
I remember that show that was about 70 people. It was a weeknight, for one. It's weird. Sometimes there's no explanation for why a show, and sometimes shows just take off, and it's like, you know, you look at the sales count, and it's like, oh, my God, this is selling like crazy. And you just kind of scratch your head. And then other times it's like, this is the best performer ever. Why can't I, you know, and you're begging people to just come in the door, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it gets to like, we've had one show this year. It's like, you know, you're looking, you're a week out and you've got like, you know, 27 tickets sold or something. And you're saying, oh, my God, we just want a critical mass. You know, so the audience is, so the audience and the performer aren't embarrassed. You know, so it's tough. It can be very very challenging, and you're right. Yeah, it can be stressful. But usually, it's like, you know, you just say, oh, I can't wait for this audience to hear this artist. They're gonna love him. They're gonna love her. And it's neat too. One of the things that's really neat is when we bring artists multiple times, like Peter, to see their growth of artists over a decade or 15 years, or even Ruthie. I mean, this is the third time we've seen her, and where she's at in her development is like, wow, she's becoming masterful. You know, and Peter, I remember the first time I saw him, he was very cerebral in his approach and really depending on his guitar a lot. And now he's hit a vein, like he started hitting on that Corduroy song in that album, where he's really mining some really human emotions and really getting into to some territory and melodically. It's just gorgeous, and it strikes a chord, and he's picking the right words. He's he's putting those images, like, you can just, you know, like, just the right detail, you know, like Lucinda Williams is so great.
Yeah.
But to see him develop and continue to develop over 20 years.
Well, he's had that opportunity. You know, we often expect people to be young and to come be, you know, they've got one or two albums and then they're done, whereas some of these artists have been at it for so long, they're developing the way a poet would or a writer, that they've got time to develop as an artist.
Yeah.
So in terms of some of the big shows you've put on where you have to rent like a big hall, I'm thinking like a Bruce Coburn or a Greg Brown or one of these, or even you've got Judy Collins and Arlo Guthrie coming up. Are you kind of out on a limb when you do that financially?
Yeah.
And if it fails, you kind of have a big problem?
Yeah, it's scary.
Okay.
Yeah, we had one show, we lost $12,000.
Oh, my gosh.
And it took us like 2 years to recover.
And that's just you and your wife, basically.
And our kids, you know. But, I mean, we're set up as a corporation, so it's not like the family. It's not
you're not going to lose your house,
It's not out of my credit card, So that's good. But, you know, when we lost that money, we took a risk. It was a summer show. And you know, sometimes you say, okay, we're in a position economically to take a risk. If it had paid off, it would have been terrific. And the show happened to be in Fairbanks, whereas the show we had there before this show had actually sold out. And then this one, we had some bad luck. We hit it was a summer of fires, you know, and it was like, yeah, it was just a lot of bad luck, little things. And, you know, and the same artist in Anchorage did well. We made money, but not enough to cover Fairbanks.
So it's safer to stick with the small artists, small venues, and
not necessarily. You know, if you sign the right person, you're going to sell out. You know, and It's just, you know, what's your comfort level in signing that right person?
And knowing your audience, right?
Yeah, but you never know if, you know, you never know what else is going to be happening, too, on a given night, you know? And you look in Anchorage, like Neil Diamond, I don't know how much, I've heard rumors they lost $1 million here. He came here, they planned on, my understanding is they planned on 2 shows for Sullivan, 16,000 tickets. They couldn't even sell 6,000. And then they started giving discount tickets just to have a critical mass. This is the exact tour that he was selling out to Tacoma Dome twice.
Hmm.
James Brown, last time he came here, barely 1,000 people. I mean, who would think James Brown could only draw 1,000 people?
Right.
It's crazy.
It's mysterious, right?
Yeah, Bon Jovi, last time he was in Sullivan, I don't think they sold out, or if they did, it was last minute. I mean, here's a guy, he sells out Giant Stadium. It comes to Anchorage. It's a weird deal. Mm-hmm. One of the things is if you have a broad demographic, like probably the most successful shows in Anchorage since I've been here have been Aerosmith, you know, because you have the broad demo. The young kids want to go. People our age want to go.
Right.
Huge yeah. shows. So you sell 24,000 tickets. And then the same with Elton John recently.
Yeah.
You know, instant sellout, broad demographic.
I want to talk more about that when we get back. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. I'll be giving out the phone numbers if you want to get on the air. It's Hometown Alaska on KSKA.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
We're back. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guest today is Mike McCormick of Whistling Swan Productions. We're going to have another music promoter a little bit later to talk about a different aspect of the music business, importing music to Anchorage. You can find out more about the topic and links to the folks we're talking to at alaskapublic.org. You can also get on the air by sending me an email. The email address here is hometown@alaskapublic.org, or call and join the conversation. Who would you like to see appear? We've got the guy here who can make it happen. The number is 550-8422, 550-8422, or outside Anchorage, 888-252-5752. And we were talking, Mike, about the audience and how you know how many people are going to come out to a show and sort of the unpredictability of that. One of the things you've done, it seems to me, is you've built audiences for some fairly obscure artists who in another town might have trouble filling up a good size hall. But here, people have been seeing their shows over and over again over the years. And so they maybe have a built-in Anchorage audience.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Byrne might be one of those. He's been here many, many times.
Yeah, I think I've introduced Dan about 30 times, which is incredible. But the thing about Dan is you never know what you're going to get with him. His shows sometimes can be unfocused and almost irritating, but you hang in there with him, and then they take off. And when you get a great Dan show, it's a great Dan show. And he really, I've never seen anybody quite think through his music and work like, and he'll take risks. Like, for instance, he came into one show at the library, and there were a bunch of high school kids that had lyrics from his shirt. And so it was like 8 high school kids that had Dan Byrne lyrics, and each one a different song. He ripped up his set list, and he went and put together a set list so he would sing a song, every song that the kids had.
That's great.
I know, but he felt awful about it because it wasn't like the set that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, so he felt like it was stale.
Uh-huh.
He maybe had done one of the songs otherwise, but he takes that kind of risk. And then the next set, he comes in, and he does like a whole set of songs, and not one of them is on a commercially released record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, you take that kind of risk.
You get the feeling with him that he's like creating it all right on the spot, which is very exciting. But like you say, sometimes it just falls flat, and sometimes it just blows you away.
Yeah, but that's why people will come back. They know they're not going to get the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll like unleash a song invariably that you've never heard before, that is just like, oh my God, you know, and that happens almost every time. One of my favorite songs now is called Stranded in Kodiak, and he wrote it on a napkin. He gave me the original when he was stranded in Kodiak with Marshall Crenshaw on his way to Anchorage. So he writes a song on a napkin, and the next day he's playing in a concert in Anchorage. He still plays it all the time. You know, he takes those type of risks, you know, just incredible. And then this last time he did like, he did four shows, I think, at Out North. He was a fantastic teacher. He did a song, you know, songwriting workshops. But like one show was, the whole first set was, or most of the show was just his Wilderness album, you know, and fantastic. And then, you know, each show was substantially different.
So people are used to him and they're coming back to hear him. Yeah.
He's got a core audience that will come back.
Listen, I gave out the wrong phone number before. It's 550-8433. 550-8433. So if you're trying to call, I'm sorry for whoever's number I gave out. So we're talking about Dan Byrne. I've got some of his music queued up, and I just wanted to let people know what he's all about. And this is a song that was inspired by a trip to Alaska, and in fact, it is about Alaska, and kinda, except he kind of riffs off on a whole bunch of other subjects. So
just Alaska Highway?
Yeah.
He wrote it. He wrote it on a trip back from Homer, you know. And one of the things he did is, like in a songwriting workshop, he takes some people. He say like, okay, I want you to take, you know, like take a person that lived 100 years ago, take a contemporary person, and take a politician. And I want you to put them together and write a verse about them. You know, and it was kind of like an insight into how maybe he wrote the song.
Yeah. All right. So, if Kristen, we're going to go ahead and play this song from it's called Dan Byrne, Alaska Highway by Dan Byrne.
Well, I would never be so dumb. Say they stole an election. They bought the damn thing fair and square. Emperor's in his underwear. Oh, King Cole's a merry old troll. Certain generals want to Marlborough. Say, hey!
That's Dan Byrne, who an artist who I think doesn't come across on his album near as well as he does in concert. I mean, that somehow that doesn't capture that same energy that you get when you're right there with him and he's improvising. And at least I don't find it as satisfying.
So I want to tell you a story.
A quick one, because we got a bunch of calls.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah. Well, the last time they ever allowed dancing in the Atwood Concert Hall was a Dan Byrne show. And he was playing Alaska Highway, and it was the end of the long tour, the Alaska Highway tour, like the long thing. Uh-huh. And so what he did is he invited all the people up on stage, and about 40 or 50 people got on stage at Atwood Concert Hall. And then it was like, how are you going to get them off stage? And they're going around, they're knocking over drums. I mean, like the band is knocking over drums. They're jamming out on this like a 15, 20-minute version or something. So I was like, what the heck am I going to do to promote it? I got to get these guys off stage. So I went up, and I started a conga line. and I got a conga line, and we congaed all the people off stage, and then the show and the song
that's
ended.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was great. And that was the last time there was dance allowed in the Atwood Concert Hall, like when they used to lower the pit and you dance in the pit.
So yeah, well, that's fabulous. What a fun job you have. Now I think Zook is called from Palmer. Were you with us there?
Yes.
No, go ahead. Do you have a question for Mike?
Yeah, actually more of a comment. I just wanted to say we saw Ruthie Foster last week, and she was awesome. I liked the act that have been coming up here, and I was wondering if there's any chance of getting a group like Rodrigo y Gabriela to come up.
One of the things that I really try to do is be courteous to my fellow promoters, and the Beartooth has brought them up. And so I would love to put them on, but my first call would be to the Beartooth to say, do you have any future plans to bring them up? So one of the things you might think about is even send a note to Dan's Beartooth and say, hey, do you have any interest in bringing them up again? I'd like to see them up in Anchorage again. But great, great artists. It's fantastic. I love the suggestion.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. And now we've got a call from Glenn in Anchorage. Glenn?
Really appreciate all the work Whistling Swan has done to put together really good programs. We've recently gone to several concerts, and some of that has come from the announcements at the beginning of the concerts when they're introducing the artist. just hearing about future shows. And right then and there, we decided, well, we're just going to pick up tickets for those. We've never once been disappointed in any of the concerts we've gone to. Really appreciate you guys, and I'll listen to the rest off air.
Well, thanks, Glenn. And like I was telling Charles earlier, the thing that's great is you know, the shows are totally ticket supported. So it's you guys who make the shows go. It's your support. So we thank you, and I thank you for trusting enough to take a risk on a show.
All right, now let's go to Doug calling from Anchorage. Doug?
Yeah, my thanks to Mike McCormick and some of the great shows he's brought up. I've been up here 11 years, and thanks to Mike, I know he brought up Bruce Cockburn, a superb show. Mm-hmm. Seen Dar Williams. Did he bring up Odetta? Because I never would have seen Odetta.
Oh, my God, that was one of my thrills. Odetta was just such a joy. I mean, remember her piano player?
It was unbelievable.
Charles,
she has passed.
Yeah, I'm so thrilled that we get a chance if you see me at a concert, come and I'll tell you some stories about her. Wonderful. But her piano player is in Bruce Springsteen's band now.
Okay.
Replaced Danny Federici.
Okay.
So anyways, yeah, thank you so much. I love that you mentioned
request,
that show.
Michael, I would put a vote in if we could ever get Amos Lee up here.
Okay, that's interesting. That name has crossed my path recently.
I think he has enough of a following here. He could fill up 1,500, if that helps.
Okay. I might hold you to that.
Yeah, you're going to guarantee that?
I'll buy up, I'll commit to 10 tickets.
We actually had a show that the first time that Fred Eaglesmith came, there was a person came to our show and he said, if you bring Fred Eaglesmith, I'll buy 25 tickets. And he did. But we only had 61 people at the show.
Well, I'll support future artists that you bring whom I may not know. But Amos Lee, I think, would be a good fit for Anchorage.
All right. Thanks, Doug. Thanks for calling. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. Mike McCormick is a music promoter at Whistling Swan Productions. And now I'd like to invite another guest to the air. Greg Shally does music promotions at Chilkoot Charlie. That's a whole different... A whole different demographic than Mike, but also bringing a lot of bands to town. Greg, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having us.
So you're the biggest club in town, and you have numerous stages. How much music are you putting on, during the course of a month or a year, just to give us a sense of scale of how much you're doing?
Well, I mean, you can actually break it down to how much we're doing in a week. I mean, our schedule. We have numerous local events throughout the month, but in 1 week we've got two local showcases. Right now it's two bands on Sunday, one band on Wednesday, local bands as well as a outside band. We've got Ettinger from Canada right now that they've been playing with at our venue for 13 years now. Then we also bring in special events as well as this week we've got three local bands playing for a going away party for a band that's going to head down south and try and make it big down in Portland, Sicarius. So we've got all that plus, our three stages. So we've got DJs playing on all those stages Friday and Saturday. So we've got a lot going on and got a lot rotating through local as well as national acts.
Yeah, so we produce some music that we send outside, although most... and there have been a few bands that have gotten their start here that have gone on to some significant stuff. I mean, I guess our maybe our biggest ever was Jewel, but not exactly. Probably wouldn't play at Chilkoot's. But what are some of the bands that you've seen at Chilkoot's have gone on to great things?
Well, most notably is a band that just did another show recently, big, huge, sold out night at Coots on a weekend. Was 36 Crazy Fist. They have a new drummer and a new album out. And Brock's been a huge fan of Coots way back in the day. And it was just a great thing to have them come back in and play our venue. Right after that, a week after that, we had the Hoons, who've been on tour down in the lower 48 for the past 6 to 8 months, I think. And they just released an album a couple of months ago. So they came out and did two shows with us. I'm trying to think. Oh, Thera went down. They're a smaller band, but and haven't been around as long. But they definitely have gone down and tried to make it big down in Portland. They've been back a few times since then and played at Coots as well.
So, Greg, tell me, how do you choose? Obviously, a lot of bands want to be on your stage. How do you choose who you think is going to, like, you know, fill the club up? And how do you sort of, I'm sure you've got a balance in terms of the cost of bringing somebody in as opposed to how much money you can make on the show. How do those decisions get made, and how do you choose sort of figure out what people want to hear?
Well, I don't know if you brought this up already, but for any promoter in town, they're well aware of what I'll say right now, is that the window of opportunity is much smaller to make money on shows in Anchorage just because of the high expense involved in bringing in acts. And us having the infrastructure already put in place with having full stages, full PA, backline gear and stuff like that, it takes off some of that sting of putting on an event.
So in other words, they don't have to ship everything up here. You've got a lot of it already here. Yeah.
A lot of the stuff we have here, we have relationships and partnerships in town that we can do a lot of trade. But, I mean, there are some acts that, like when Filter came to town, they required a digital board, and that all of a sudden, you know, that blew us out on budget because we had to go in and get two digital boards, one for the monitors, one for the front of house. But what I say is, basically, there's a lot of expenses involved. We take a lot of things into consideration, but mainly when we're hiring an outside cover band, we insist on going to see the band because you can do a lot with video and audio in the studio, but you can't capture what's happening in the club live and meeting people face to face. And that's happened over a period of time of some hard lessons there. The other thing is with the outdoor events, our large parking lot events, we changed that in 2009 and started to charge a ticket price to get into the events. And then we had a budget to work with. So mm-hmm. we try and stay within budget, and we try and appeal to something that's going to attract young audience as well as an older audience, because it really is a community event.
Yeah, that was something Mike said, is you got to have broad demographics if you're bringing in a big act. But did I just hear you say that you have, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but it sounds like you have some pretty amazing business trips if you're traveling around the country listening to bands and clubs and deciding if they should come to Alaska.
Well, it might sound that way, but it really is a lot of driving. And the last one I went on took me from Philadelphia and some small, tiny bars where we didn't hire anyone. And then I went all the way down to Houston, Galveston, Texas, Austin, Texas, Biloxi. And out of all of that, we hired one band.
Wow. So you've got, I mean, you really are being selective because you got a lot of money on the line. And I guess, I mean, you really want to fill that club up with people who are paying tickets and buying drinks. And if you blow it, that's not going to happen. Is that sort of the bottom line?
Well, take what you do for a one-time show and multiply that times 4, 5, 6 weeks. I mean, when we go out and buy a band for a cover band that plays Tuesday through Saturday, our minimum buy is like 4 weeks. Sometimes back when 20 years ago when I was playing in a cover band, we did 8 weeks here. That's quite an investment. But when you've got that investment, you want that to pay off, because at 8 weeks, you can pay it off if you've got a decent band and you've got some energy going there. You're taking a gamble.
And if it's not good, then you're probably hurting the business overall.
You're stuck.
Yeah.
I mean, what else can you do? You know, I mean, I do remember one time we did have to send a band on their way a little bit early, but it just wasn't a good fit. And they agreed too. And we actually found them work in another town. But it's one of those things, you have to do everything you can to make sure this is the right act. And that's the same as a national act that comes in and does one night, or it's an act that, you know, you're going to keep for 8 weeks. And like I said, you know, Pete Ettinger, I mean, this is, I think, their 13th year here. He's done very well here. And he does really well year after year because he stays current with the music, and he's got good musicians with him. I mean, that's all you can hope for, is that they're going to try as hard as we're trying.
What an interesting business. Well, I really thank you for being on with us, Greg. You've given a really interesting dimension to this that I'm really glad we had. And I think Mike has a question for you. Mike?
Yeah, I always appreciate Kutz. So we've done three shows here over the years, and nothing but great things to say about Cruz. I'm a big supporter, so keep up the great work.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Greg Shally from Chilcoot Charlie's Productions. And it's Hometown Alaska. We've got about 10 minutes left. A few more calls, and I'm sure other people want to talk to my guest, Mike McCormick. Lowell in Anchorage, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks. I just wanted to really thank Mike for what he's done for the town and bringing in all the music. And I would say, why don't you bring in Bob Dylan?
That would be something we'd love to do. You know, that would be fantastic.
It was tongue-in-cheek, but you never know with him, so it's worth a try. But really, when you brought in Richard Thompson, that was just about as good. I just could not believe we were going to have the chance to see Richard. So thank you so much, and also with Chris Smithers.
Well, thank you.
I was in the fourth row for that Richard Thompson show. I could not believe that the guy's musical skill. I mean, you know he's a legend, but just his ability to perform by himself on the stage was extraordinary.
That blew my mind. We've been after him literally 15 years. I mean, every year I just kept at it. And finally, you know, he said, okay, we've got to go this time, even though there's only one gig that's, you know, paying well enough. You know, so he came up. He flew in from London, you know, via Vancouver to here to do the one gig and then went to West Coast. But that was one of my most satisfying shows. I totally loved it.
Uh-huh. Well, I suppose at times you can do a show that maybe doesn't make all that much sense financially because this is your love and you want to do it and maybe other shows will pay for it, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't sound too sure of yourself.
No. Sometimes, like, we brought in Great Big Sea once and we knew that even if we sold out, we did it with the Turnagain Arts Alliance, even if we sold out, we'd lose money. But we had the opportunity to bring him in. The only place we could put him was a hall that was too small for him, but we brought him in anyway. So sometimes we'll do that for the art.
Uh-huh. Do you have, I know, how many artists have you had? Like hundreds?
Hundreds, yeah, like close to 500.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are there any that you have always wanted but you've never been able to get?
Well, yeah, you know, there's a lot of them, you know, and some of them we never get. One of the people that is like Ray Davies. I would love to get Ray Davies, and he's getting kind of old, but he's playing smaller venues. He played the Neptune in
Seattle. And I'm not familiar with him. What is he?
You do know him. That's the challenge with promoting him. He's the lead singer of the Kinks.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I love him.
Uh-huh.
And another one in that realm is Eric Burdon. Mm-hmm. Of the Animals. He just had back surgery, but it's like, I love Eric Burdon. John Sebastian. Lemon Spoonful was the first show I ever saw. John played Coots, actually, and he also played the Egan. I would love to get John up here. I mean, if somebody said, Mike, you have one show left, I just would call and beg, John, please come for it, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, so some of those old guys that I'm kind of nostalgic about, I just love them, but lots of people. There's so many people, and that's one of the things. It's like, oh, my God, you know, you start making these lists, and there's like 100 artists you want to bring, and then there's 100 artists that you've already brought that you want to bring back.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, if there's an artist who is a really big, do you have to just say, well, I can't go for that person because he's too expensive? And how does that work? Do you share the gate with them, or do you have to pay him in advance, or what is it?
It's all money, you know. Mm-hmm. It all comes down to money, and people are paying their mortgages. So usually you give a guarantee, and the bigger they are, the bigger the guarantee they want. One of the things that really holds back Anchorage is we don't have a lot of venues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the PAC, we have the Denina, which is limited availability because it's mostly for conventions. The PAC is full. I mean, every weekend there's stuff in there, and there's 2,000 seats. Like if Bonnie Raitt is going on a small concert tour, she's looking for 4,000 seats, you know, for one night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a challenge. One thing that's going to help is the new UAA arena. That's going to hopefully have some prospects for some concerts. The sound will probably be much better than the Sullivan. So, yeah, we're lacking venues here. That's a big mm-hmm. thing. But not just here. It's like if you come to Alaska, you're going to fly, you want to have multiple dates. And people don't want to come up here for one date unless you're paying them extraordinary money or it's on their list and it's the last place they're going to play. And so that hurts us statewide because you go up to Fairbanks and they're hurting much more than us. They didn't build a performing arts center.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that has probably cost us more shows as a state than anything that anybody in Anchorage has done because it's like there's so limited availability. There's a high school that you can use with 1,100 seats, and it's really limited availability. And they charge, I did a show up there this summer, I got charged more to go in the door there than I did for you know, for 2,000 seats in the Performing Arts Center, and, and I got nothing supplied for me. You know, so we're really lucky here in Anchorage that people had the vision to build the things that we did, especially Anchorage Performing Arts Center and the Sullivan, because there's been some extraordinary shows there. But, you know, the infrastructure statewide, we've got to have it, and we just don't have the population. I mean, we did a show with Brandi Carlile in Fairbanks. This summer we had 500 people. We had 1,500 here in Anchorage for her. That's just about proportional as far as the population. You know, so you might say only 500 people for Brandi Carlile up in Fairbanks, but you're looking at the population you're drawing from, that's not bad, you know, especially in the summer.
Would you be able to make more money if you did more shows in places where you could sell alcohol? Because, I mean, a nightclub, that's how they're making most of their money, right?
Yeah, like with Whistling Swan ourselves, we have to rent. I mean, we go in the door, we go to Vagabond Blues, we pay rent. You know, we pay rent, and we've never taken any of the money, you know, and if we're in the tap route, we're paying rent. You know, so yeah, if we had our own club, if I was like 30, I would probably like to get Whistling Swan Place going and, you know, set up a nice listening room with limited alcohol and stuff. But yeah, that would all help.
And we've spent all of our time, and we haven't asked you about your day job now, which is no longer teaching kids, but working at the university.
Yeah, the University of Alaska Anchorage is just, it's a cracking place. I'm working in student activities. We do about 150 events a year. The UAA Concert Board has two fantastic shows coming up. They have Matt Kearney coming up for Winterfest in February, and then they had Macklemore coming up later in the spring in the Egan Center, and those tickets will go on sale soon. The Concert Board is student-run. Zach Clark is the staff who works with the students to pick these people and to do the contracts, but they've done incredible, incredible stuff to bring in, like, someone as for, you know, like St. Vincent. I mean, cutting edge. Yeah. I mean, Anchorage doesn't get the cutting edge, but they're doing it. And Andrew Bird, fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
So, and it's just thrilling to say, with a new venue coming online, and one of the, you know, some of the practice.
And those shows, of course, are open to the public. They're not just for students.
Yeah, yeah. We give it to students discount because they're paying into the fees. But, you know, just incredible, incredible stuff at UAA. It's just a fabulous place to work. Gallery, I get to work for gallery. There's a Birds and Art show. If you're interested in nature, it's open to January 25th. 60 of the best artists in the world, their work is on display, including our own Hugh McPeck. You know, fantastic stuff. Every day there's fantastic stuff over there.
Yeah, great. Well, this has just been an awful lot of fun. Mike's a guest that I've wanted to get on as long as I've been doing this show, and I really appreciate you being here, Mike. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks, Charles. It's been a blast.
Great. And earlier we heard from Greg Shalley from Chilkoot Charlie's and from Peter Mulvey, who's going to be performing early next month here in Anchorage. Next week on Hometown Alaska, join host Kathleen McCoy for a discussion about Pioneer Homes of Alaska. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org, and that's where you find links for some of the shows we've been talking about and for Mike's organization. You can also join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor, audio engineer, keeps the whole thing going. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which do not reflect for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.